Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1444, air date May 22nd, 2024.
All right, everyone, this is Dr. Shiva Ayadure. Today we're going to be having a discussion about the truth about Marxism-Leninism, a systems analysis. That's what we're going to start with today. So I hope you guys enjoy this. I'm going to have a conversation with Caleb about this. So let me just bring him in and we'll go right here. And I think I should be able to present with him. All right. Caleb, are you ready? I'm all set, Caleb. We can go.
All right.
All right. Where do you want to start?
Welcome, everybody. I'm here with a man who has a PhD in biology. He's also the inventor of email, and he's running for president of the United States. I know many people that are part of our CPI community. Getting an echo.
You getting an echo?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. There we go. He's okay. Running for president of the United States on a very interesting platform. It's really an honor to have you here. You are known to the internet as Dr. Shiva. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure, Caleb. This is Dr. Shiva Ayadure. Many of you know I'm running for president of the United States, but more importantly, you know, my journey has been really through an interesting field of science and engineering called system science, which can be applied to many things, politics, health, medicine, engineering. It's one of the most profound fields of science and engineering. And, you know, I'd really like to talk about, you know, the journey that I went through growing up in India in a what's called a system of oppression called the caste system, but also having experienced very interesting areas of medicine, ancient systems of medicine. And the journey I went through to come into the United States, one of these precocious kids who started working as a young teenager, as 14 years old, as a research fellow at Rutgers Medical School, where not only was I integrating computing and medicine as a kid, but I also created the first email system long before I came to MIT.
Wow.
Which reveals the fact that great innovations are not a result of war, that, you know, everyday human beings have immense capacity to solve problems. You know, innovation is in everyone's DNA. And so I did this all before I came to MIT, the invention of email. When I came to MIT, I was very, very interested in systems, started a revolutionary newspaper on the campus of MIT. And we'll talk about that. A very different approach to the left liberal approach. And it was a systems approach that we took, integrating many, many different aspects of revolutionary theory, but advancing it with system science. In many ways, Marx and Lenin, the realities, they made great contributions, particularly Marx, to retrospectively understanding human system science, where he knew it or not. There were errors that he made prospectively looking at it, but a lot of Marxists don't want to talk about Lenin because Lenin gave teeth to Marxism. Mm-hmm. And Lenin's work really brought in the concept of, you know, democratic centralism or organization principles. But the reality is both of these individuals did not have access to the knowledge of systems. So when people go off and they critique Marx and Lenin without having this understanding, they're doing it, frankly, in a very subjective way without really having a desire of a real interest if they want to move history forward. So, I think it's important to talk about that because my journey coming from a low caste background in India, traversing through engineering and science, getting 4 degrees at MIT, doing many, many accomplishments within the military industrial complex. But this unique perspective I had that innovation does not need to be anointed by the elites, that I created email long before I came. When the news of that came out more publicly, because I never really talked about it when I went into the Smithsonian in 2012, the vitriol that came out was really a multiplicity of things. One is it was a dark-skinned Indian guy talking about inventing email, but more importantly, it was done before I came to MIT. The narrative is you come to MIT or you drop out of Harvard, you get anointed to be part of the elite class, and then you're authorized to innovate. But the truth is the invention of email came way before that. Just like the invention of TV was done by Philo Farnsworth, who was also a 14-year-old boy. So I have a unique perspective on where innovation comes from, who are the great innovators, and you'll find out it's everyday people solving simple problems or complex problems. So that's the journey. So, you know, my journey went through these three levels of science and engineering, understanding systems, medicine, but also politics. Since as a 17-year-old kid, you'll see me on the ground as an activist, burning the South African flag on the steps of MIT, you know, organizing massive anti-war protests, you know, organizing food service workers. When I went to India, I exposed the corruption in the Indian government, even though I was appointed by the Prime Minister of India to run one of the largest innovation centers. I whistle blew, and that resulted in my having to leave India. You know, when I was there on a two-year Fulbright. I'm hearing some feedback. Are you? Oh, okay. But, you know, that journey ultimately made me recognize that we need to build bottoms-up movements. And these movements cannot be done just in theory. You need to have theory as well as practice.
So I wanted to ask you, you know, I watched some of your videos. I'm not as familiar with your content and your messages as many of my viewers are. And, you know, there was a great amount of anticipation. People are very happy that the two of us are speaking. One thing I noticed that you said, which I totally agree with, you talk about the elite and you said they want to kill you or they want to kill us. Now, can you tell me what is behind that? What do you mean they want to kill us? Why do they want to kill us? What is their motivation for trying to drive down the population, reduce living standards? You talked about how our children are likely to have a lower life expectancy than we have. What is behind this?
Well, Caleb, when you really look at this, you know, if you, you know, there's a book I have there called System and Revolution, right? And in many ways, that book leaves off where Marx and Lenin ended. It applies the concept of system science. And what you realize is that the elites have a very specific goal in control systems. Their goal is maximize power, maximize profit, maximize control. The other 8 billion of us have a very different goal, maximize truth, maximize freedom, maximize health for all of us, right? So these two are very, very contradictory goals. So the elite's goal of maximizing profit, maximizing you know, power and control ultimately leads to an imperial model, imperialism, and that ultimately leads to a state, a transition of, or a phase of modern systems society where you have to, the elites are looking around and they're wondering, why do we need all these humans? They see humans as a problem, right? And that problem is, in their view, going to be resolved by looking at, do I need so many workers, right? Or can I replace them with machines? And then they have to do this calculus on that to figure out, is the maintenance of a machine going to be more costly than the maintenance of a human? And they may have done some of these calculations in certain areas. But in their trajectory of maximizing power, profit, and control, we, those who actually produce value, right? Those people actually create things, those people actually make things. If they can replace them and, you know, maximize more profit, more control, they're going to do that at a much lower cost. So if you look at the policies of the elites over the last 60, 70 years, starting really in the 70s, during the period of the 1900s to 1970, particularly in the United States or even globally, there was, starting the late 1800s and 1900s, people rose up bottoms up. Many, many of these movements were starting. People may have not gotten the theory perfectly, but they were rising up. And those movements in the United States resulted in massive gains that the elites do not want to acknowledge. The workers' movements in the United States, and those workers' movements are why we eliminated child labor, why there was any modicum of basic infrastructure. And you can keep going down the list. Long before the vaccine, 1963, the measles vaccine came, 98% of measles was wiped out because of infrastructure. And that infrastructure came not from the behest of the liberal elites like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was actually a racist scumbag who was serving the elites. It came at the fact that there was a growing mass movement which puts the fear of God into the elites, so they threw reforms at people. But between 1900 to 1970, if you look at the U.S. economy, as GDP grew, the wages of everyone in the United States grew across all income quartiles. And that was not because, again, of some New Deal. It was because there was still a mobilized bottoms-up movement of organic trade unions. There were still remnants of that even up until the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It was a McCarthy era where the elite started branding all of those bottoms-up movements as being somehow run out of Russia, right? That they could not be organic bottoms-up workers' movements. And so the right wing, you know, did the Red Scare, and then the left wing, and from my analysis, took over all of these bottoms-up movements. And so by 1970, most of the unions started getting busted, you know, heightening with the Patco strike when Reagan came into office. So if you look at from 1970 till today, there's been maybe 2 million workers in about 900 strikes. Between 1900 to 1970, there were close to 11,000 strikes with close to 250,000 Americans taking to the streets. So as the unions were taken over, as many of the so-called workers' parties liquidated themselves, frankly, they had bad theory, they became left wings of the Democrat Party, you had the transfer of about $50 trillion in wealth of the American workers to the elites. And that is directly correlated to the fact there was no more movements, no more bottoms-up movements, because the left and the right collaborated against working people. So part of that 1970 effect was policies that were enacted by the elites, and those policies destroyed people's biologies. Okay, so as a systems biologist and as a, you know, system scientist, you can see the scale across, or you can see this problem across multiple scales, at the large scale of a social system, all the way down to the microscopic scale of the human molecular system. So every policy that the elites passed during this period affected people's biology. The massive amounts of income inequality created massive stress in physically in humans, right? The breakdown of communities of people. The number one reason people live long is friendships, communities, trusted relationships. All of these things got broken down by design. You started abusing the environment. In many, many ways, because you wanted to maximize profit, Monsanto, GMOs, and go down the list of things, right? But it's not any one thing. Mandating one size fits all medicine, which is what a vaccine is. So it's not looking at the immune system as a complex system where it's about the right medicine for the right person at the right time, right? So if you look, again, it was between 19, it started in the late 60s or early 60s till today. There's been a set of policies that have been enacted to destroy, or having, you know, if you want to give the elites a benefit of the doubt, having no regard for people's biologies on a good day, right? But more importantly, treating human beings as a commodity that could be used and abused at will. And if you follow that thread, it has led, if you look at the American population lifespan, it's going upside down. And it's not because of the vaccines per se, right? It's been going on for a long time. It's a system of policies. This is why I say we need a systems overhaul, because that curve, if people go to shivaforpresident.com and you go to the download section, you know, we have a flyer, and on that flyer, you know, old school flyers, you know, I love going to train stations, still handing out flyers, you know,
yeah.
But that upper left quadrant of that flyer has that curve of what's going on throughout the world, where the curvature is going down. Globally of lifespan. But in the United States, it's precipitous, which means if you have a child today, your son or daughter is going to live shorter than you. That one key performance indicator, Caleb, pretty much indicts all of the elites of Hollywood, the elites of academia, the elites of politics, all of them, because none of them can get away if when you look at that report card, none of them. They've all been part of the destruction of the biological system of everyday working people. That's what that system shows.
Okay. Well, what's interesting now, what you talked about, you know, replacing human labor with machines, labor-saving technology, doesn't this point to Marx's whole concept of the tendency of the falling rate of profit, the problem of overproduction, and the, you know, the issue of basically a situation, people being homeless because there are too many houses, people being hungry because there's too much food. This is the built-in problem of capitalism. And does this point to our elite having the Malthusian solution that Marx critiqued in theories of surplus value, the idea, well, we'll just reduce the population and degrow in order to stabilize the economy, which is the economic basis of fascism in a lot of ways. I mean, would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people who have not read Marx or sort of cursory read Marx, it is overproduction, right? that leads to this, because capitalism starts overproducing stuff, right? Because it doesn't. And so that's where we've come to. But if you, this, the second point that you made, this leads to fascism, and you're, that's what you're seeing. I mean, people are praising this guy down in El Salvador, but he's a fascist, right? He's a quote unquote, a liberal fascist, right? But this is where it leads to, because if you take an engineering system standpoint, the elites have created during every generation a much more unstable system. They create instabilities. If you take a pen and you try to, you know, balance a pen on your desk, it's going to fall. It's highly unstable. But in order to stabilize such an unstable system, you need massive amounts of observability. Which way is a pen going to drop? And then massive amounts of rapid control. Okay, controllability and observability. These are two very important things that are necessary for a control system. Well, the elites have gotten to that point. They've created such instabilities, local instabilities, global instabilities, this is why they need massive amounts of censorship and massive amounts of surveillance, because they have to be able to gather as much data as possible, as quickly as possible, so they can take input actions to control these very, very unstable systems. So that's where we're at, Caleb, where the economic conditions, I mean, I think in some ways Marx underestimated the following, and you can't blame him, because he didn't understand, he couldn't see where machines were going to come, the nature of machines, the use of energy. He thought we were going to get away from our machines, right? But the reality is we've gotten closer to our machines. It's quite a fascinating event. And those in power want us to become machines, or they will create machines, right? So this phenomenon Marx could not have predicted. But more, you know, pronounced is the fact that the level of instability that the elites are dealing with is quite also profound. You see, when they had markets to expand, you can keep expanding. And one could argue there's still some significant markets to expand, right? Africa, parts of India. But the conundrum is that the rapacious need for profit, the rapacious need for control, is minimizing their even productive forces to achieve some of these gains. So given all the instability, that's where we're headed. We're headed into massive fascism. And you can see this, I'll give you an example. On Victory Day, you know, there was an interesting speech Putin gave, a very accurate analysis of the fact that the Russian people, the Russian working people, the Soviet people, the Soviet Union were the ones who actually stopped Hitler. I mean, it wasn't D-Day that saved, you know, most of humanity from fascism. It was the working people of Russia and the Soviet Union, you know, millions of them, tens of millions of them, who fought Hitler door to door, right, in many ways. Sure. And all of this is not known in American history. So I put up a very interesting tweet. I said, basically saying, you know, we must honor these people. It's, you know, the Russian people and the Soviet people of the Soviet Union. What was fascinating, Caleb, and I've never seen this in the many years I've been on Twitter, even though I was thrown off for 2 years when I exposed the fact that it is a government who has a backdoor portal into Twitter, and we should talk about that. It was I who uncovered in my historic lawsuit, not Tucker Carlson, you know, not Glenn Greenwald, not Mike Benz. These people are deep state guys who came in to do limited hangouts to actually not give the limelight to the work I've done. And we'll talk about that. But fundamentally, what you saw once I put up that post was fascist Nazis coming onto that post and attacking it. I'm talking about open Nazis praising Hitler.
Yeah.
And what's happened over the last, you know, for years, you know, for 40 years, you know, I've been a big fighter on the ground against Zionism, you know, exposing that anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism, doing a lot of education. Some of you may have seen that video that I did, which just came out very, very fluidly, which said, I'm the only presidential candidate who does not suck Zionist cock. Now, it's a very truthful statement that came out, and it went viral. I think even on Twitter, it got about 1.5 million views in spite of all the shadow banning. But it hit at the heart of this issue that working people recognize this very important dynamic that Zionism, which is really a political ideology, was in cahoots with Nazism. If you just do a little bit of study of history, you'll find this.
Of course.
Yeah, but Zionism is this political ideology which says a small set of people justifies, should rule over many, no different than Nazism, no different than Indian casteism, Brahmanism. And it's quite interesting, the right-wing Hindu casteists were all gung-ho for supporting Israel, right? So Brahmanism, Nazism, Zionism are all many much the same, different flavors a little bit, cultural flavors, but they're fundamentally the same in terms of political ideology, which basically rationalizes why a few people should rule over many.
Well, let me ask you now, in light of, you talk about all this censorship that's happening and all the suppression and the historical revisionism, downplaying the role of Russia, etc. The Uhuru case is something we've been following here very closely. The Center for Political Innovation, my organization, we have done a lot to do everything we can to raise the case of, you know, Omali Yeshitela, Penny Hess, and Jesse Neville, who are facing this indictment, from the U.S. Department of Justice, alleging they're Russian agents because of their socialist activism in the Black community in Florida and Missouri. As a presidential candidate, do you support the call to drop the charges against them to free the Uhuru defendants?
Well, you know, look, philosophically, from the little I've read about it, and I was just introduced to this probably about a couple of weeks ago, right? Unfortunately, because so much of this is pressed in the news. The ultimate right for free speech, the ultimate right to exercise is precisely so people can share those ideas, right? And sure. Obviously those charges should be dropped. Prior to 1970, if you looked at the mail in the United States, 70% of the mail was a very diverse set of political views, right wing, left wing, Nazis, communists, everyone. And it's very important to understand that the founding fathers, even the framers of the Constitution, wanted very diverse political views. They created a very interesting institution to support that, Caleb, which gets not fully recognized, called the Postal Service. Hmm. The Postal Service was the instrument to give teeth to the First Amendment, not the Second Amendment. Because when, prior to 1776, Franklin was actually running the Crown's Postal Service. And we want to talk about censorship, they would open up every letter, right? The British would. And they did not like Franklin, Benjamin Franklin, because they thought he was loyal to the growing American revolutionaries, by the way, which was not a working class movement, right? It was a bourgeois revolution, but nonetheless, it was revolutionary at the time. But when the founders in 1787 created the Postal Service, that was done for this one singular reason. They wanted free speech to equal free reach, not what, Doofus Musk talks about, Elon Musk. Elon Musk has openly said free speech does not equal free reach, which is what the ADL also says, okay? This was not the intention of the framers of the Constitution. Free speech was supposed to equal free reach. And they created the Postal Service that every U.S. citizen could send a letter to someone for, very, very low cost. Very important to understand this. And the Postal Service also had its own police force, which is to make sure that if a postal employee opened a letter, it was a 22-year sentence in prison. Mm. It's quite an interesting institution, And these postal workers, if you think about it, they get your letter everywhere. It's one of these institutions for very low cost. You can distribute lots and lots of content. So up until late 60s, nearly 70% of the mail was very rich, diverse political communication. Hmm. Now in 1997, very important date, that's when email volume overtook postal mail volume. As the inventor of email, I was running a different email company at the time. I went to the heads of the Postal Service. I said, you know what? This is really dangerous because all of these free email companies were private companies. And if you read their terms of service, they own your mail. Mm. You're no longer under the coverage in some ways of the government, the Constitution, which protected your mail. Okay. The private companies will say they have First Amendment rights. So they own your mail. They can do what they want. So I met with the officials of the Postal Service. I said, you know what? You guys should offer a public email service. Huh. Because look, if someone opened your email and it was under the behest of the Constitution, you have constitutional rights. Google, Hotmail, Microsoft own your email. And then it became even more vulnerable with the events of social media. Social media companies own your content. You saw Facebook a couple of months ago sell all of the direct messaging content to Netflix. And Netflix sold them all the viewer analysis of movies. So you have this. And then in 2020, when I uncovered the fact that the government has created a backdoor portal to every social media company, you see, we've destroyed. There is no First Amendment anymore. And this was brought to you by Donald fucking Trump. It was Donald Trump who signed CISA into action on November 16th, 2018, which basically said allowed government to create all the linkages to social media companies.
And remember, well, that brings me to what I wanted to ask you next, which was, I've seen also in your videos, you've repeatedly said the future is offline. The future is not online, get offline, et cetera. And that's a reality that my organization, as we promote an anti-war message around the country and we try to raise awareness about stopping the low-wage police state, et cetera, we're coming to terms with that as well. And that the need to get offline. So can you tell us, you know, kind of the mindset behind that and why you emphasize that in a lot of your rhetoric?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what we do. You see, it's interesting. I said, we have these little cards, you see? These cards are more powerful than what Elon Musk or these guys says, workers unite beyond left and right. You say truth, freedom.
I like that.
Okay.
I like that.
All right. What's going on as someone who understands technology, you know, in 2020, and I saw this, you know, I was at the center of this here in 2020, I just run for Senate as a Republican in Massachusetts. On a primary where the primary was September 1st, Caleb, of 2020. And we had close to 3,000 volunteers on the ground. The Republican GOP hated us because we were actually wanting to oust the Democrats. They don't, you know, they're all, you know, one party, right? So we had 3,000 volunteers. We raised $2 million, unheard of in a primary election. The opposition Republican candidates in a blue state like Massachusetts are lucky if they raise $20,000, okay? We raised $2 million. And you can leave Massachusetts without a Dr. Shiva sign. So on the date of the September 1st, 2020 primary results, even the GOP admitted Dr. Shiva is going to win the primary on the landslide. Well, they had backed a guy. They found an Irish-sounding guy's name, O'Connor. They gave him $200,000. The guy couldn't even raise any money. Maybe he had one lawn sign up. We had 25,000 lawn signs up all over Massachusetts. It was a massive bottoms-up movement. Well, the results come in on September 1st, 2020. It turns out that we win in one of the nine counties in Massachusetts, which is an all-white working class community, by 10 points. But in every other county where they used machines, it's 60-40, 60-40, 60-40, 60-40, 60-40. And in my own naivete, I said, oh yeah, and probably my own prejudice, I said, oh yeah, election fraud occurs in those third world countries, but surely not in the United States. And in that county that we won, it's all hand counted paper ballots. So I went to the Secretary of State and I said, I want in a FOIA request of ballot images, because on the electronic machines, they take a picture of the ballot, the paper ballot, and those images are saved, supposed to be saved for 22 months. Well, the Secretary of State of Massachusetts said they deleted the ballot images on video. Okay. So I, in a series of email interactions, I say, you know, what you did was illegal, and show me the law that allows you to do this. Anyway, those four email interactions where they're admitting that they deleted the ballot images, Caleb, I put up on my Twitter account, because we've moved our campaign now in the general election to a write-in campaign, which is also unheard of. People don't do that, right? We did, because we had thousands of volunteers on the ground. So we move it to a write-in campaign. I'm still running as a bona fide candidate for now Senate. And right when I share these emails where they're admitting they deleted ballot images, this is in 2020, long before the Trump stuff, I'm thrown off Twitter. Hmm. That leads into a lawsuit, which I had to file. No lawyer in Massachusetts, for that matter, most lawyers do not want to take on the government. I had to do it myself in federal court. And the judge accepted the preliminary injunction hearing. And in that hearing, this is again now in October of 2020, in cross-examination, the social media director of the government of Massachusetts is admitting that they were very upset with my post and that they have a special VIP desktop portal into Twitter, a VIP portal. So the government has VIP access. This was what I call the government's backdoor censorship portal. Wow. And through that portal, they silenced me. And the judge asked, how did you feel when you silenced Dr. Shiva? They said, oh, we felt relieved. Well, the judge said, you know, don't you know something called the First Amendment? Why didn't you simply tweet back at him? Anyway, he gave me all the terms of the TRO. We informed, you know, I have Tucker Carlson's personal email address. We informed him, Glenn Greenwald, ACLU. They did nothing. They sat on it on purpose. Why? Because I'm an independent candidate exposing one of the most malevolent things in American history, that the government, this is long before Mike Benz, who's a, you know, deep state operative, you know, you can talk to people. So they remember, the government likes to do limited hangouts. They don't like to talk about when an independent person breaks the truth, right? They want to control.
Well, and that's another thing that I've noticed that you talk about in some of your videos that I really agree with, is that there's a lot of controlled opposition nowadays.
Big time, big time. Booby fucking Kennedy, Donald fucking Trump, right? You go down the list, okay? Tulsi Gabbard, Tucker Carlson, Alex Jones, and all of these people I know, Joe Rogan. The establishment recognizes that a bottoms-up movement is coming by people like me who understand political theory, who studied Marx and Lenin, who understand the history of political movements. And this is dangerous to them. They do not want someone like me, who should have been co-opted by the establishment a long time ago, but who never lost, you know, my loyalty to people that I come from, be it working class people in New Jersey or my poor lower caste, you know, people in India. I never lost, for whatever reason. I've had many, many chances to be co-opted. They do not want guys like me who understand theory, politics, engineering, science, who've studied Marx, Lenin, you know, revolutionaries, liberal, otherwise, you know, works of John Law. I mean, you can go down the list. I've studied all these guys, putting all this together and mobilizing a movement. So they know that movement is coming up. And they know that a guy like me exposed Kennedy, exposed Trump, and we're ripping people away to build independent movements. So in opposition to that, Caleb, they must accelerate into fifth gear to create more NSOEs. I call them not so obvious establishment. Tulsi Gabbard, obviously a fucking warmonger. She was all out for invading Iraq, all out for butchering the Palestinians, but they present her as though she's like a, you know, the Bernie Sanders equivalent, right?
So, and a lot of these voices online that don't lead people into a real organization.
No movement.
Just no movement. And that is the biggest problem. You're building an in real life movement.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah, I mean, we get out there and we hand out cards. I go 6 a.m. at the train station and I hand these out, right?
Yeah.
We have a very powerful program at truthfreedomhealth.com. We leave off where Marx and Lenin ended. And we are, you know, I've done a lot of the theoretical work. So, you know, I'm one of those guys who went and studied the Comintern notes of the first, second, all the way up to the seventh Congress, figured out where some of the mistakes were made. Okay. And again, these weren't quote unquote mistakes. These were fundamental problems because they didn't have system science theory then. And in fact, most of political revolutionary movements have been run by lawyers, philosophers, quote unquote, political scientists. Not people understand engineering physics. And a lot of that theory didn't come into being until, frankly, the 1950s. So we have that advantage now to advance political theory. And so my conclusion has always been bottoms-up movements, independent bottoms-up movements that have theory as well as practice, what I call a warrior scholar. So that's what we've been doing. And in opposition to this, you can see Robert Kennedy's campaign literally comes to our open houses, literally takes notes of my statements and replicates videos. We have many, many examples, many, many examples. He's a fucking scumbag. All right. In 2020, you have to understand, you know, I was the first one to call out Fauci. I was the one who started the Fire Fauci ground campaign. We collected 180,000 signatures, delivered it, drove it to Trump. Fucking Trump didn't do nothing because he's in bed with Big Pharma. In 2020, Kennedy was promoting lockdowns. He waited 2 years, you say, to talk anything, or a year and a half to talk about Fauci. And the good thing is you can see it. It's recorded right there. All the receipts are there. Rand Paul didn't say anything against Fauci until a year later. He used our hashtag to raise money. So we have to start looking, Caleb, if we're looking for leadership. Did you say the truth at the right time? And did you say the truth at the right time to lead to learned helplessness, which is what Noam Chomsky and those guys do. The academics do that, right? Mm-hmm. Or are you telling the truth to mobilize people into action? That's right. What I've consistently done my entire life from the time of 17 years old. And that telling truth is become in vogue right now. A fucking idiot like Vivek the Snake wearing a truth hat. Are you fucking serious? This guy is a Brahmin, brown nosing, bullshitting, big pharma motherfucker. Okay. And he knows what he's doing. They went and found a brown guy to start repeating my statements, because this brown guy, who's actually a revolutionary, words were going broad and deep. So they created these characters, and that's what the establishment is doing. They are stealing content, which moves people, and they're able to do this now, Caleb, because they have companies like Palantir, Peter Thiel's company. They're watching this video right now, and they're saying, wow, these people are liking it, right? They're seeing that Zionist cocksucker video. Wow, people really are getting Zionism. So in response to that, they had to pass a bill in Congress to equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. You see, so the establishment is working in real time now. They gather data, what messages they're hitting, the observability, and then controllability. They call up their friends in Congress, in Hollywood. Very, very important to understand. Hollywood's heavily involved in creating characters. Booby fucking Kennedy is a character. He is not for the working people of this country. So the elites are now in a very desperate situation. They're trying to figure out which puppet they will use to manipulate people back into the swarm, as I call it. Okay. Will it be Trump? You know, will it be Booby Kennedy? Will they have to find somebody else? So, and they have to conflate Zionism back to Judaism. They have to conflate anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism. And so what I've seen now, to your earlier observation about the rise in fascism, they're going to bring back Zionists and fascists together at a much faster rate. There's a reason that they put this fool Fuentes back on. Fuentes is, you know, clearly, you know, he conflates anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. Okay. He's a very necessary idiot that they need. Mm-hmm. And so you will see young people who think, you know, they want to have some necrophilia relationship with Hitler, you know, some, they are part of this conflation, and some of them are just dumb, but others are much more sinister. So we're going to see this explosive growth, unfortunately, of Zionism and Zionism and Nazism working close together. Zionism needs anti-Semitism, and Nazism needs anti-Semitism. You see, they both work collaboratively. But
yeah, fundamental. Well, I mean, and that seems to be the defining aspect of the period we're living in, is people are unhappy. Living standards are going down. People don't like the police state they're setting up. People don't like the wars. And so they're getting angry. And so they are trying to manage dissidents in as many ways as possible. And I think probably one of the main ways they're doing it is what you pointed to, is keeping people just in this state of being passively entertained by, you know, edgy social media voices or
exactly
in the establishment, and not joining a real mass movement. And I think that's what you're communicating. I could not agree with you more. I think that's absolutely right.
And the more sinister versions of this are things like messaging MAGA communism. Very, very dangerous concept, right? By this fool, Jackson Hinkle, who, and you have to understand, this is no different than National Socialism. It's not that far away. Okay. So the critical thing is, when I look at people, do they want to get on the ground and build a movement? Are they willing to go and learn theory, get on the ground? You know, right now, we have to collect signatures to get on the ballot. We're actually going and doing that. But our mobilizing people, they don't do that. Kennedy has signature vendors who do that, because they actually don't have ground support. When we're out there collecting signatures, we don't see any of them out there. I'm sure they're in a boiler room faking these signatures. But our mobilizing people bottoms up, you know, they're like bad students, Caleb, in a classroom. You know, they don't do their homework. Well, it doesn't matter. We're willing to do the hard work. By us actually collecting signatures, we're creating a clear set of action steps for people to get on the ground, handing out flyers, handing out these little cards on the ground. Okay. Gets people interested. But I did want to talk, you know, in many ways about my view about the truth about Marxism and Leninism and a systems analysis. Cause I know when you sent some, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time on this because, you know, my journey as a 4-year-old kid, when I experienced a caste system in India, really got me very, very interested in really wanting to understand these systems, revolutionary systems. So pretty much read anyone I could get a hold of, you know, be it the liberal philosophers, right? Locke and Bertrand Russell, or Plato and Socrates and Lenin and Marx. I mean, I was a voracious reader, and I read as much as I could understand. And my conclusion, you know, when it comes to Marx and Lenin was the following. Marx should be, he may have not known it, but he was a system scientist. And when I teach this in our course, right, Marx was retrospectively looking, you know, from the point that he was backward, and his retrospective observations, probably 95% of them were right on the money, or 98%. But what Marx was really observing, the truth about Marx, was that he recognized that consciousness was a direct result of productive, you know, forces in society. This is quite profound. And this is revolutionary, you know, his analysis. Where I come in, Caleb, is the theory that I've had advanced that with is in engineering system science, we have the concept of phase transitions, self-organizing systems. You see, these concepts didn't come into being until only in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Okay. And so if you look at a system, take a simple case, you have a cube of ice. Under a certain condition, that ice becomes water, right? And under another set of conditions, it becomes steam and maybe even plasma, right? But it goes through these phase transitions. The conditions have to be right, and the particles in these systems in many ways self-organize. It's quite fascinating, okay? So in Marx's retrospective review, you know, he looks at hunter-gatherer societies. He understands that these hunter-gatherer societies had very specific political systems, which was what he called primitive communism. And their economic system was communist, right? Sharing, there was no ownership of property. Women in many of those cultures ran those societies, you know, for various reasons. I come from the South Indian culture, believe it or not, very closely related to the Dravidian people, who Marx and Engels wrote about in Family, State, and Private Property, very similar structures as the Iroquois. It's fascinating, even linguistic structures. But at some point, and this is where Marx says that an innovation took place, some innovation, the plow, the domestication, and that transformed society, this, you know, phase of hunter-gatherer societies to a very different phase. It was like a phase transition took place, what we call feudalism. The governance system was monarchy, right? And the political system was feudalism, right? And then at some point in history, a new innovation comes, which was the ability, the steam engine, organizing labor, right? Manufacturing systems. And then you transition from this one phase to another phase, which we call capitalism. And whoever you are, one must also recognize most of modern business schools use all of Marxian knowledge. If you go to business school, they may not give Marx credit, but the concept of surplus value, many of these concepts come from Marx. The bourgeois professors will not give Marx credit, but substantially most of economic theory comes from Marx, still taught in business schools today. What Lenin, the greatness of Lenin's work was Lenin understood this concept of, you know, he was an engineer who understood, in many ways, who understood this concept of that these systems, and I think he articulated it best, are not stationary systems. They too undergo various stages of change, adolescence, adulthood, and he characterized at that point the capitalist system as imperialist. And I think the underestimation Lenin had was probably underestimating the extent to which capitalism still had new markets to expand and grow. But nonetheless, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution during that early period made some significant gains in coming up with some very important principles of democratic centralism, which, by the way, are used now in every boardroom in the United States, right? All major organizations are organized around Leninist principles. But the Lenin, I think, understood that revolution could not take place in any one country. Obviously, after the Bolshevik Revolution, as John Reed said, 10 days that shook the world, right? You had 15, 16 countries trying to invade Russia or the Soviet Union, because it was a bomb that went off, because every working person throughout the world said, wow, the working people of Russia just took over, right? Why can't I have that in my country? And so that is the arc that we've been dealing with. And the work that I focused on is, when you look at systems engineering, system science, it advances this work and gives us a powerful way to apply system science, Caleb, to every aspect of life, medicine, science. You can use the same set of organizing principles, and also to organize.
Well, I want to talk about, you know, circle back to something you did say before, because, you know, when it comes to the whole MAGA communism thing, I feel like I don't completely dismiss the brand in the same way, because I feel that there's a lot of people that should be getting interested in socialism, but because of the way the left has become, it has become such a hostile cancel culture atmosphere. You know, you would never be welcome on the left because you're critical of the vaccines, God forbid, you know, and that a lot of the people that are dissidents are getting into the MAGA sphere, and that those are the people that ultimately need to be engaged with about Marxist and communist ideas. I've never fully embraced the brand of MAGA communism. I think it's very poor marketing. I mean, anyone who's MAGA is going to hate communism. Anyone who's a communist is going to hate MAGA. But I think it points to, and that's kind of what I got at when I wrote this book, Where is America Going? Marxism, MAGA, and the Coming Revolution. What I pointed to was that it was kind of acknowledging that the so-called left has the wrong target audience, that increasingly dissidents are finding themselves in the Trump camp or being targets of the left, and that kind of calls for a reorientation of leftist thinkers or those who advocate, you know, socialist and Marxist ideas. What do you think of that?
So let's go back. You know, history repeats itself, Caleb, right? Yeah. The rhythm may be different, but it repeats itself. The reality is the people promoting this concept are adolescent, you know, left-wing infantilism. Let me explain why. Having been a student of this for nearly now 43 years, okay? Mm-hmm. I've studied this very, very carefully. Let's go back to the early 1900s in Germany. If you go look at that, we're repeating many of the mistakes. So, you know, there were close to 1.5 million to 2 million working people organized in bottoms-up trade unions in Germany. The elites knew that there was going to be a major revolution in the world, and they knew it was going to occur in Germany. All the material conditions were right. Unlike Russia, which only had 3% industrial class, Germany had close to, you know, probably 5 to 10 times that. So the elites put all their forces behind Hitler. And Hitler's job was to destroy those bottoms-up workers' movements. That's what he was put in place for.
Sure. Absolutely.
He started co-opting their messaging, national socialism. MAGA communism. I'm sorry. Okay. National. Well, it was a national. Well, let me finish. Okay. And what Hitler proceeded to do, and he co-opted many of those people, of those working class leaders, many of them who weren't that strong in theory, they actually started supporting Hitler. And there were a significant number of people in Germany who wanted to fight Hitler, ground level people, the quote unquote leadership who think they knew better, sold those people out. They said, oh, wow, Hitler's saying some really good stuff. Wow, national socialism. Wow, it sounds pretty cool. He's for working people. He's for the German worker who was fucked over by World War I. Wow, yeah, you know, maybe we should be part of this, right?
Well, national socialism's target was always Marxism, though. It said Marxism was the greatest enemy. Well, it said Russia was the enemy. Yeah, Marxism was a foreign conspiracy. Yeah,
right, but what I'm saying is they co-opted a lot of these workers' movements by using go listen. If you sort of didn't know that background you just said, and you just heard a Hitler speech, you would think he's for the workers, the working people. Go look, you know, the working people are exploited. He's almost talking like a quote unquote, a communist fighter for workers.
Right. Well, I think what made the communists unique in the 1930s was that they wanted to actually change property relations. The Social Democrats wanted to just gradually, one step at a time, change things, and it wasn't leading there. And the fascists had this vision of, we're going to build this mass nationalist state that'll just, you know, control the economy or whatever. But the communists were the only ones saying, we want to actually abolish the capitalist system and implement the planned economy.
The problem was the Social Democratic forces capitulated to Hitler. Okay. Yes. many of those forces were still in power of many of those trade unions. They took over them and they capitulated. So when people don't want to do the work of building the bottoms up movements, they're lazy. Yeah. And that's what MAGA communism is. It's fucking lazy. They don't want to build a bottoms up movement. They think there's some trick, some cleverness. You see, as someone who still works for a living, I work as a full-time engineer. There's no cleverness here. You think you're going to be a social media influencer, do the right hook. There's no trick here.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right about that.
You can't trick the forces. Yeah, you can't trick the forces. Right.
And that these are the same forces that anytime anyone does anything in real life, they say, oh, it's cringe. Right. Oh, it's, you know, and they immediately lampoon it and attack it, et cetera. And look, our organization, CPI, that continues to have in real life events and conferences, we've been attacked. And immediately after an attack we got, I was directly told, by a certain prominent person, you need to stop organizing. That's what I was told.
That's why you need to
stop organizing. And it was made clear, they don't care. I can get on the internet and, you know, make funny faces and talk in funny voices. But when you're building a real organization, that is what they want to stop. And that's what they're very threatened by, the elites.
Yeah, the elites and the so-called fake people who talk about wanting to help the poor people in Palestine, put pictures of babies being butchered, you know, want to get subscriptions, want to do views and clicks. These people are in many ways, I have a serious problem with them because they do not want to build bottoms up movements. They're against people like me who actually get their fingers dirty and go build these movements because that is going to put them out of business. It's no, you're just being an influencer. You know,
exactly.
Jackson Hinkle is part of that. I was on a Twitter space and got very upset with me talking about this kind of stuff. Oh, it goes, it's boring. He's a fucking fool. Okay. He's being projected as, I mean, if you're on Fucker Carlson show, okay. And overnight projected, there's a serious issue, but I'm saying this is the danger of people who do not ever get their hands dirty. They're moving from one day being a surfer, another day wanting to be a social, fighting for the environment and, oh, wow, let me talk communism, Marxism, Leninism. This is my new shtick. Really fucked up people. Because it's almost spitting on the working people of the world. And then saying, oh, I like Putin and like Xi. That is not what, you know, bottoms up movements are. You're always talking about the working people and building up these bottoms up movements.
Well, when I go around the world to communist gatherings, I see organizations that have millions of members, that have roots in communities, that have labor unions, that have seats in the parliament, that control whole regions. And that is what we urgently need in the United States. We need a real mass working class movement.
But
there is a big effort to divert this into some kind of online, you know, entertainment show to take people away from that. And that almost all of this, whether it's left or right or whatever, leads to a pessimistic place. It says there really is no hope. It leads to people in a very individualist place and tries to keep them out of joining any mass movement. And I think that is something we can absolutely agree on.
Well, the bottom line, Caleb, is that going out, collecting signatures, handing out flyers, talking to people, this is work. And this takes effort.
Yep.
And the people who have interest in doing that work are actually working people, want to liberate themselves. Influencers and being online, quote unquote, you know, grifters have no interest in that. Mm. So this is where the big, big, you know, problem is, because what that leads to is learned helplessness over time. And that is what the goal of the elites is, to think, well, you know, we put all these pictures up, we did all these videos, nothing has changed. Well, because that entire platform is owned by the elites. When you have to go out and you have to communicate with people in your neighborhoods one-on-one, and you have to build these bottoms-up movements, that's where the real work begins. So in our movement for Truth from Health, it's very easy. You know, we have about 500 million people came to know about our movement in 2020. Out of that, we have close to 1 million people connected with us. You know, we have email addresses, connections, all that. And then out of that, we're trying to get people on the ground, right? And that is a very, very different task, because people are thinking, if I reshare something, I retweet something, I, you know, watch a video, I'm changing the world, you say? And this is the interesting challenge, to move people to this higher state of consciousness where they need to understand that you have to have theory and you have to do the work on the ground. And that's what we are doing, you know, every microsecond, doing that. And you get to a point, you realize that engine, that momentum is what the elites are so scared of. And for that matter, the quote unquote people talking MAGA communism or people talking Joe Rogan people are all the emerging, not so obvious establishment. As long as you're watching Joe Rogan and you're hearing Tucker Carlson suddenly talk about 9/11 and aliens, you know, I mean, he won't talk about Zionism, nothing relevant at the time. He'll talk about everything that's 20 years or 10 years or 1 year old news. And this is by design. So, you know, our job, you know, what we do is we expose the NSOEs, the not so obvious. You have to. And anyone who doesn't expose them and talks a bunch of stuff as they want to change the world, that's seriously an issue. Most of Lenin's work, you know, 80% of his work was exposing the Social Democrats and the Kautskyites. All right.
And then, no, that was I wrote a book, Bread Tube Serves Imperialism, going after some of these big voices on social media speaking in the name of socialism. And I just wrote this book and I was immediately attacked. All these people start in with, oh my God, that's cringe. Who would write a book? What socialists write books about other socialists? I'm like, have you read Lenin at all? Every book he writes is critiquing Kautsky, critiquing you know, social democracy and Bernstein, but they have no idea what the Marxist tradition is. They've just watched some stream.
Even a Marxist or a Leninist tradition. When I get back to a systems tradition, this is a scientific tradition.
Yes. You know,
I mean, I publish still papers in science and biology every day. What is a scientific method? You say, okay, this is what others have said. Mm-hmm. This is a critique. These are the things they did well. These are the critiques. And if we want to move this field forward, this is where we have to go. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is where we're at for the last 50, 70 years, social democracy and fascism has run the United States. It has ensured that working people do not build bottoms-up movements. It created the Bernie Sanders, the Al Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, the freaking Donald Trumps, the Booby Kennedys, the Tulsi Gabbards. So people sit on their butts. And you have to do, but you have to expose these people. So a lot of people say, oh, I'm in the medical freedom movement, but they will not hit Kennedy. Or a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I care for America, but they will not expose Trump. So, and they're sort of dawdling into the same social democracy bullshit that occurred when Hitler rose. So if, you know, even making comparisons like, oh, Trump is 1,000 times better than Biden. These are very, very wrong comments to be made by conscious people. For example, I see people do this. Why is this wrong? Because you're giving hope to the working people as though Trump is 1,000 times better than Biden. When you look at the scale of that, it's 0.00001 versus 0.0001. Okay. On the scale, it's still close to zero. All right.
Well, okay. So as we're wrapping up here, because my time is limited.
Yeah.
I do want to just say, based on everything you've said about the importance of building mass movements and engaging people, can we book you for a CPI event at some point in the coming year? Can we bring you?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. We'll bring Dr. Shiva to speak at one of our conferences and engage with the different voices we bring. I'll do it.
Our goal, Caleb, is we recognize that independent, bottoms-up movements, true independent journalists, okay? I don't care what political background they're from, but if they want to really learn, you know, get sort of the knowledge, the understanding that, you know, our movement is acquired and we openly share it, we're open to that, right? Because the reality is that where we're at today, the elites control mass media to such an extent, they control the data gathering of that, and they in fact control what they present to us as the fighters, right? So they've created on the front end a rainbow of political, you know, oh, here's Tulsi Gabbard. She's fighting against the military-industrial complex. Here's Booby fucking Kennedy. He's fighting for medical freedom. Here's Trump. He's fighting for the American.
Well, let me ask you though.
Yeah.
Would it be strategic though, if you want to talk to people in the Trump movement and get them to understand how things really are? You want to talk to people who might support Tulsi Gabbard or Bernie Sanders. Would it be strategic to find a way into those spaces where you don't come in with guns blazing?
Well, I think Lenin offers some very, very specific lessons on this. Lenin's did go guns blazing. I'll give you an example. In 2020, you have to understand, I've met with Trump multiple times. I'm the one who did all the election fraud analysis. Trump is the one who, you can see videos where he's praising me. I want to thank the great computer scientist, Dr. Shiva. You know, he invited me to come to Mar-a-Lago a couple of Novembers ago after he had endorsed a guy who did the election fraud. And I respectfully refused. 90%, oh yeah, Donald Trump invited me. I'm going to go to Mar-a-Lago. Then when I was in Miami, he invited me again. I had a 2-hour meeting with him. And the reality was, the question was, what did you do with that $500 million you raised using my material? Okay. And I can give a longer discussion when Mark Meadows called us here, Rona McDaniel's office called here, Eric. So I know all of these characters. They've used my material to make a shitload of money. Yeah. Right. The reality is I had to do the job exposing Trump. All right. Mm. And we lost 20% of our followers. But you know what, Caleb? This is the mistake the young people are making who think there's some trick. I'm going to win the Trump. You have to hit them hard. And you know what? The people that we have, the 80% they remain, they're like, fuck, Dr. Shiva's absolutely right. I'll give you many, many videos. The reason I have to do the custodial work of exposing Rogan and all these guys is people will see those videos. They'll go, you know what, Dr. Shiva? I was a Trumper. I was a Kennedy follower, and I was going to give him $20,000. And everything you said is absolutely right. I had to sit there and self-reflect. I had 2 days of cognitive dissonance. And we'll hear many stories. But the people who come to our movement like that are really the leaders. You cannot build a movement on swamp. You have to build it on strong leaders.
Yeah.
And that takes effort. There's no trick. And that's what we're doing. We're finding those people. And like a magnet, those people bring other people over. You know, in organizational theory, Caleb, 30% of people, the work of Price Pritchett, will never agree to anything that's new. 50% are watching which way the wind blows. 20% are the agents of change. The problem is the agents of change, the problem they make is they think there's some trick to win the 50% over. They think, oh, I'm going to wear a Trump hat today. Okay. I don't do that, any of that shit. But the reality is if you want to change the world, you must focus on the 20% and strengthen them. And that 20% will bring the other 50% over. So this is a theoretical problem that opportunists make. And they may be doing it naively, but they end up becoming the forces of opportunism. Okay? They're not willing to say, this is the model, this is a plan. So our movement is very specific in this. We will hit fucking Trump really hard. And if you have a problem with that, oh, Dr. Shiva, you were so supportive of Trump. You did all the election fraud. I can't believe you're betraying us. No, you need to get your head out of the ass. And I'll give you an example. We do open houses every Thursdays, you know, for a worldwide community, we do two of them. We had a woman show up who was a rabid Trump supporter. I can't believe, you know, you used to support President Trump and now you're against him. And I said, do you mind me if I play this one video? And it was a video I put together of all the contradictions. At the end of it, she was crying. It's a 3-minute video. In the video, do you see, he says, I'm going to follow you guys onto the Capitol. And he goes the other way.
Yeah,
that's fucking betrayal. If you were truly a revolutionary leader, he would have gathered people's arms and he was saying, we're going to all march to the Capitol. That's what I would have done. That's not what he did.
That's true.
He went the other way. And I said
that at the time. Yeah.
Right.
At the time, I pointed that out.
This woman has become one of our great volunteers, right? She said, holy shit, you're right. You see, so the opportunism game is going to backfire. And history shows that there is no shortcut, Caleb. So I've thought about it. Obviously, look, I've built many companies. I know how to be diplomatic. I can go into that realm. I can be a hard noser. But in this thing, you have to draw the lines very clearly. So it's a very important strategic, tactical, theoretical. It melds theory that people have better get clear. Otherwise, they will become opportunists. You know, opportunism is a very, very slithery snake. People end up in it thinking they're doing something clever. You know, cleverness, trying to be a clever monkey leads you to opportunism. People shouldn't be that clever. They should just follow the forces of matter, which is, this is what the line is, and find the good people and the others will come across. You have to build a strong organization. You have to build the right framework. There is no urgency in some ways. Yet there is an urgency, but if we don't have real principles and we don't build organizations on those principles, it's opportunism.
Wow. This has been a very, very insightful interview with a lot to think about. We're going to be probably discussing this for weeks within our organization. And you laid a lot of truth on us and you gave us a lot to think about. So I want to thank you. You know, where can people check out your work? What's the best way to engage?
First is people should go to truthfreedomhealth.com. We've created an entire system, almost like a university of revolution engineering, right? People, we teach people the same system science that I used to teach at MIT. We teach people theory, history, and then we get people on the ground. So truthfreedomhealth.com. But that movement now, you know, in the United States, it's manifesting itself in my running for president. And that's at shiva4president.com. And everyone should go there if you want to do something very simple, quick. Go get one of these bumper stickers offline, right? You put this bumper sticker on the back of your car, Caleb, 100,000 people see it in a day. 100,000 people. This is what the elite, it's your car, put one of these on. That's what, you know, because we have ground forces, that's what we're going to do. Look at the way they run their campaigns. They don't do shit until September 4th. They get everyone's money and then they spend TV advertising. Our movement actually has people on the ground. So our movement says, go get a bumper sticker, put it on your car, hand out cards. Right? They don't have people to hand out cards. We do. So shiva4president.com and go to, you know, truthfreedomhealth.com. But it's a lot of hard work, man. But for the last 50, 60 years, 70 years, our parents should have built these movements and they didn't. They got lost in Bernie Sanders. They got lost in, you know, Trump. They got lost in Obama. They got lost in the swarm.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thank you. And my best wishes to you in building a mass movement. Thank you.
Great, Caleb. Look forward to speaking with you guys. So
yep.
Best to you.
Thank you.
All right. That was Caleb Maupin. He's actually in an organization which is, I think, called a communist institute or something. So, you know, I really wanted to get across to Caleb. You notice that many of the communists, quote unquote communists, do a lot of contradictory things. They think there's some secret to building a movement. Like you know, go to the left and to the right, you call yourself a MAGA communist, right? The reality is we need to build a bottoms up movement. And that is what, you know, our organization that we're focused on. So everyone go to truthfreedomhealth.com. And really understand what it takes to build a movement. Get involved. And you go right there to learn about it. Our run for president is an articulation. It's a reflection of this powerful movement. ShivaForPresident.com. Go get a bumper sticker. Volunteer. We need to get on the ballot. The path we're taking is truly the road less traveled because it requires actual work. You know, I'm going to be going out and collecting signatures. You won't find other presidential candidates doing that. They, you know, they get other people to wipe their ass. We don't do that here. We're working people who are building a bottoms up movement, really building it, not just saying that we're building a movement. So get involved. As I exit, I want to share with you our a campaign video, but get involved.
Who would have ever thought I'd be running for president of the United States of America? I was born a low caste untouchable in India's caste system. A system of aristocracy, oppression, and racism. My name is Dr. Shiva Ayyadure. I'm an MIT PhD, a Fulbright scholar, a scientist, engineer, entrepreneur, and inventor. My family and I left India to come to America on my 7th birthday. I grew up in the working class neighborhoods of New Jersey, playing baseball, mowing lawns, painting houses, and coding software. My friends and neighbors are blacks, Italians, Irish, people of all races. As a 14-year-old, I wrote 50,000 lines of software code to create the world's first email system and was awarded the first U.S. copyright for email, recognizing me as its official inventor at a time when copyright was the only way to protect software inventions. I did that long before I ever came to MIT, revealing that big innovations can occur anytime, any place, by anybody. Growing up, I saw politicians dividing us by race and religion in both America and India, to have us fighting each other while they remain safe in their gated communities and in their playgrounds of Hollywood, Martha's Vineyard, and Silicon Valley. I'm a fighter. I fought racism and exposed their imperialist wars, fought for workers, and put my life on the line against global corruption. I never wanted to run for political office, All that changed when I saw working Americans as never before being duped by the establishment and the not-so-obvious establishment. Across left and right, we were being sold out and made to forget why we came to America and why America existed. Lawyers, academics, billionaires, celebrities and politicians, elites, Clintons, Kennedys, Bidens, Obamas, Bushes, black and white have hijacked America. They printed trillions for their friends. They delivered crumbling infrastructure, corruption and racism. They've transferred trillions to themselves, dividing black and white, fear-mongering and fake science. Lockdowns and censorship, dirty air, food and water, pushing drugs upon us, making us sicker. We've been sold out. One set of rules for them and another for us. We deserve a warrior with a history of courage in putting everything on the line for you, who believes in you, not them, who has created a movement bottoms up for truth, freedom, health. I've exposed their lies at the right time, never waiting until it was popular. I've exposed their false gods who exist to lead you back to them. I've exposed their fake science of lockdowns and masking and provided you solutions to fight them and win and protect your immune system, saving millions. I exposed Fauci, galvanized the Fire Fauci campaign when others remained silent. When they stole our election, we sued the government and Twitter in our historic 2020 federal lawsuit, exposing in bare view the government and big tech censorship infrastructure, the unholy alliance between government and social media companies. Where was Elon and his grifters? They stood by the sidelines and did nothing. They did not use their megaphones to help us when it could have made a big difference. Now our movement grows for truth, freedom, health, independent of all of them. Every day millions are learning the science of systems, the knowledge the elites do not want you to have, so you may learn how to think, stand up, and fight, independent of the establishment of left and right and their fake heroes. Now it's time for you to join the movement to win back America, to win back truth, win back freedom, win back your health. That's why I'm running for president of the United States. This race is about you. This race is about truth, freedom, health versus power, profit, control. We've had enough. They think we'll fall in line and vote again for their lawyers, celebrities, billionaires, and chosen ones from above. We choose our heroes from below, from the rank and file, who do what is right at the right time, not when it's convenient and popular. They can never represent us. What America needs is a movement by the working people, for the working people, who are educated, organized, decentralized, and fight for independence from their systems of control. And that movement exists. It's ready for you. We don't need them. We need us to go bottoms up, neighbor to neighbor. My journey, your journey, are all the same. It's our time. It's time we had one of us. It's time to win back truth, freedom, health, to win back America. Be part of this historic movement all the way to our victory on November 5th, 2024. If you're an American citizen, pledge your vote now for Dr. Shivaya Duray, the independent candidate for U.S. president. No matter where you live, you can be a part of this. Volunteer as little as 20 minutes a day. Don't delay. This is Dr. Shivaya Duray, and I approve this message. Paid for by Dr. Shiva for president.
All right, everyone. I hope that was valuable. Get involved, get involved, get involved. And recognize that moving forward, I'm going to do more and more of these systems analysis. It appears many of you really like this analysis. I got a lot of great comments from the discussion I just had with Caleb about the truth about Marxism-Leninism, as we said, a systems analysis. And we can go deeper into this, but there's a lot to learn from these kinds of systems analysis. Be well.
We need to build a bottoms-up movement. Go to shivaforpresident.com and volunteer.